Hey weirdos, Lydia here with All the Things That Make Us Uncomfortable, a new podcast where three friends talk pop culture, politics, and pretty much whatever the hell we want, all with our own brand of awkward comedy. Listen to us anywhere you find podcasts, and join the party on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ATMU Show, or email us at atmusocial@gmail.com. Okay, bye!
Give me your money!
What?
You heard me. Give me your fucking money.
Hey, man, don't shoot.
You're mugging us?
I don't believe this.
You better believe it or you're dead. Give us your money.
Oh, no.
All right, here, take this. It's full of money.
No. That's mine. Don't fuck with me, man. We want your cash, not your luggage.
All right, you can take the cash, but we need the wallets.
We want it all. Hurry.
Oh, come on. Let us keep the driver's licenses and the snapshots.
And our badges.
Shit, cops.
Right, what do you think? We all wear uniforms. We all drive around in cars that say police on them.
Excuse me. Look, see, I'm with you.
You're under arrest.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you do or say will be used against you. You have the right to an attorney.
Give me your guns, man.
No, you can have the cash, but we gotta keep the guns.
Shit!
No, I don't want to be responsible for guns falling into the hands of riffraff such as yourself.
You have the right to the beverage of your choice in the precinct coffee shop.
Now, fellas, this is just me talking, but I would rather get shot with one of those piss-in 22s than with my 38.
Ooh.
Now, you're already under arrest. Don't make it any worse for yourself.
Again, I'm going to shoot your ass.
Pointing a gun at a police officer? Can we waste them for that?
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of thing starts in a home.
It's the educational system.
No, the new math drives them nuts.
Right to the streets.
Ready?
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today is Sam Stepanenko.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Yeah.
It is afternoon for us.
Yeah, it's a nice windy Sunday afternoon. And Trish Coughlin is a slave to her work right now, so she's raging over having to do everybody else's work at work, so she's playing catch up and can't be here today.
Oh, you so missed such a great setup there, Jay.
I did? Did I?
Trish Conklin is running scared.
She's running scared.
She's not here.
She's just not here. I totally did, didn't I?
I'm sorry, Jay.
Yeah, you're right. I could take to it.
You could take to it.
But no, it's funny this way.
It's more fun this way, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh. We don't pay her. But they do.
But they do. Yes, they do. Poor Trish.
Yeah.
But as somebody who had to miss some episodes because of work, periodically, I understand sometimes you have to go to work.
Yeah, and if I am working, then there's just no podcast until I can get to it.
That's the truth.
That is the truth. Thankfully, I have more consistent hours than both of you.
Yes, yes, you do. Yeah. And, I mean, we always kind of plan ahead just in case something does happen.
There's only like 2-3 times a year where work kind of, or events kind of get in the way. Yeah.
Or illness, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and then the illness.
Or injury, like Jay is so prone to.
Oh, I'll record over injury. That's okay.
I think the only time you missed because injury was when you sprained your ankle that one time. I think you did have to take a week off.
Oh, work, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think I used to skip the podcast.
I was sure we did.
We might have, but we're always a little ahead.
We always like to have that at least one extra one in the can so that if we do have an emergency, it's okay. We're still consistent. We still get that podcast out single week.
That's right, because, we're professionals.
We're professional amateurs. No, we're committed, or should be committed.
Either or.
Yeah.
So, today we're talking about Running Scared. And, man, I enjoyed this. This is probably one of my more favorite episodes, at least movies we've covered for an episode. Who knows, maybe this episode will suck, but
well, way to put that out there, Jay.
But But talking about this movie, I mean, I can't wait to talk about this movie because it is Running Scared from 1986, which I think gets overshadowed by a lot of other buddy cop movies that were popular at the time. The screenplay was by Gary DeVore, who wrote Raw Deal and The Dogs of War, which is interesting considering how dialogue heavy this is and how dialogue non-existent Raw Deal is.
But Dogs of War is pretty dialogue heavy too.
Yeah. Screenplay was also written by Jimmy Houston. And this movie was directed by Peter Hyams. We've talked about him before. Come on, Sam. Come on, Sam. Come on.
It's not going
to
happen.
It never happens. It never, ever happens.
You know, the funny thing is, I actually meant to look and see what else he'd done, and then I went into the wormhole and I completely forgot.
Let's see if I can get you there. He directed 2010, the sequel to 2001 Space Odyssey.
Okay, I knew that because I read about that.
Time Cop.
Okay, yes.
End of Days.
Okay.
But we talked about him in episode 47.
Still drawing a blank, dude.
Outland.
Oh, for crying out loud. And I really enjoy, I still enjoy it, Outland.
That was your suggestion.
That was, too.
High Noon and Outland.
Yes, it was. Boy, do I suck at this.
Well, it just goes to show you, like, who's doing the research around here.
It is you, almost exclusively you.
And most of the time, it's just, like, half-assed research where I'm like, all right, here's my director, what's he done? Hey, we've talked about him before.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like I said, I did start to do the research, and I went down a different direction, down the wormhole, and completely...
It happens.
Yeah.
I try to stay focused, but it happens. I'll go down the wormhole once I got the notes I need.
Yes. Yeah. See, and I don't take notes. I'm terrible for that. As we all know from when I was hosting, that I actually used Jay's notes for the first week. I did not so bad the second week. Third week, I had the notes down pat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Once you get into a rhythm of it.
But yeah, I just literally look for tidbits that I can throw out there just in case you miss them.
Yeah. The one thing I couldn't find was a budget for this thing, but it did quite well.
It did quite well.
Yeah. It grossed $38.5 million in the U.S., and I think it did another like 16 in home video rentals
and
stuff back when people did that sort of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that part of the reason it did so well is because both Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines were hot properties at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And it was fun because neither of these guys are action actors.
No, I mean, yeah, you got Gregory Hines, and he'd been like on Tap and White Knights, and then there's Billy Crystal, who was primarily at that point, I don't think he'd even done When Harry Met Sally or City Slickers yet, so this is kind of after Soap, so he's still kind of that hot guy, but he was mainly bigger on the comedy circuit at that point still, so he wasn't actually a star, you know. He hadn't hosted the Oscars a bazillion times yet.
Yeah, no comic relief.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, no. I think this may have actually been sort of like a breakout film role for him.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it sure showed Gregory Hines his comedy chops.
Oh yeah, he was so good at that.
Yeah, I think it's down to like that unique look of his face where he just kind of looks like a sad, dopey dog.
Yes. And the chemistry these two have.
So good.
I actually want to...
And that's going to make recasting this so hard.
It is going to... I had a real challenge with that. So we'll get to casting later, but I really did struggle with sort of trying to find some people with some
chemistry. And that's one of those things you... Do the you casting cast can't be written in stone because you kind of have to have these guys read together to see if they have the chemistry that's going to make that moment work.
Yeah, and I almost, like, as I was watching this, going, fuck, I wish these guys had done like a sequel or something else together because they just so well together.
Yeah, the script was originally written for an older cast.
Yes.
Before the director decided to go younger, and you could tell there's a couple of lines that make it sound like, yeah, this was meant for an older.
Especially when they talk about how long they've been on the force.
Yeah, 16 years, and then we have Gregory Hines is celebrating his 36th birthday, or was it his 34th? We're not sure, because they kept arguing about it, but if that's the case, and they were 16 years on the force, he would have been 20 or 18 when he went on the force.
Yes.
That is highly dubious.
Very dubious.
Yeah.
I mean, well, 20's not that bad.
I
could buy that because, you know, you come straight out of high school into police academy.
I could buy that, yeah.
I could buy the 20. So that's why I inclined to go with at least 36.
But that's pretty damn young.
That is still pretty damn young, especially coming up on 20 years. Like they only have 4 years left before they're...
Yeah, so you can tell when they're talking about retirement. Yeah, that might have been for an older... Gene Hackman was one of the original cast, and I think Dustin Hoffman, but don't quote me on that one. I remember reading Gene Hackman for sure.
Yeah.
And then later on, when they wanted to go younger, they were thinking Tom Selleck and John Travolta. Like, oh, those guys wouldn't have had any chemistry at all. Tom Selleck would have been fine, I think.
Yeah, I think he would have been fine.
It's hard to say, you know, John Travolta in that era, maybe, but I don't see it.
Yeah, 86? Well, where was he in 86? What was he doing?
Yeah, well, this is post the 70s disco era, so...
yeah, he kind of... This is really...
This is, like, what was the comedy thing he was doing? Was that Look Who's Talking, or was that Three Men?
Oh, that's right, that would have been... But those came out after 87, because the first one came out in 88.
Still kind of in his dead zone era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hadn't had that career... Slight resurgence with the Look Who's Talking movies.
And then Tarantino came along.
And gave him his...
Next boost.
His next significant boost.
Yeah, which he's since squandered again.
Yes. yes.
Yep. So, yeah, this was a very interesting pairing.
Worked. It worked really well. This cast is amazing.
Oh, the cast is incredible. Let me tell you about this cast.
Segway.
Gregory Hines, of course, we just talked about. Billy Crystal. Stephen Bauer. You might remember him from something called Scarface. Yeah. Traffic. He was in Traffic as well.
Thief of Hearts, which was a great 80s movie. We should do that.
Maybe. We might have to. Darlene Flugel, who's been in some cool stuff and not so cool stuff. To Live and Die in L.A. Cool.
Yes.
Lock Up.
You know what? We might have to do that. We might have to do it. It's not a great showcase of Stallone's talents, but it's a fun movie.
I like.
So do I. I'm fully enjoyable.
Yeah. Joe Pantoliano. Pantoliano?
Pantoliano, yeah.
Pantoliano? He's got no word at the end of it.
Pantoliano. Pantoliano. Pantoliano, there we go.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Pantoliano. But he's been in a ton of shit. Memento and Matrix are probably his bigger roles.
The ones that people would recognize him from for sure.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's got a huge body of work. That guy's been working forever and will take just about anything anybody offers him.
Good or bad. Yeah. So, yeah, he plays Snake in this. Dan Hedaya, he was more of a TV actor. I think what's her name on Cheers?
Yeah, he was Carla's husband.
Carla's husband on the show. But he was in Blood Simple and Mulholland Drive, so I'm like, fucking, he's got some good movies under his belt, too.
He's such a unique-looking man. I love seeing him on screen. Yeah. I really do. I'm sorry.
John Grise was Tony Montoya, and you might remember him, and I bet it took me a while.
As soon as I saw him, I knew who it was.
I didn't, but Laszlo for Real Genius. Yep. I'm like, wow.
And he's also in a sequel to a movie that we've done on the show. He was also in the Fright Night 2.
Yes, which we might cover because Fright Night 2 was remade when they did the sequel to the remake of Fright Night. They were going to carry on, but actors didn't want to come back or whatever, so they wound up remaking the original Fright Night 2. So I've been toying with going back to that, but I wanted to give those Fright Night episodes a bit of space, wide berths. But I think we'll do that at some point.
Yeah, good, because I really liked the second Fright Night, actually. I was like 18 or 19 when I saw it.
Yeah, I saw them a few years ago, but it doesn't hold up. But yeah. that's part of the fun, right?
That is part of the fun, yeah. And yeah, he was I remember seeing him in that going, hey, I recognize him. That's Laszlo from Real Genius, right? And he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
As well, but mostly supporting stuff.
Yeah, speaking of somebody who's in a lot of stuff as a supporting actor, Jimmy Schmidt is also in this as the bad guy who rarely gets seen because it's, you know, even though the main story is to take down this Spanish gangster who you know, wants to be the new Al Capone.
He wants to be the crime boss of Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But we don't see him a lot because, like, yeah, this is the goal, is for them to take him down. But it's not the centerpiece of the story, which is, as far as buddy cop movies go, this is a very interesting one because it's really not about that.
No, it is. It is really about their relationship with each other and their relationship with the city they live in.
Yeah,
I mean, there's the running joke about getting shot at, right? And being shot.
Yeah, the love of the job, and they don't take it too seriously, and maybe that's a good thing considering some of the shit they have to see every day. Yeah. The banter between the two is amazing. So when they're forced on a vacation, they're like, hey, we're just slowing down.
It's not such a bad thing.
And then, uh-oh, they got careful.
Yes. Yeah. You know, this is where I wish Trish was here, because I wanted to see her. I really wanted to hear her rant about the Florida bit, because there's a different girl every day.
Yep.
Every day. And actually, there might be multiple girls every day based on
The montage of the skating and
the scooters.
The scooters and stuff. And there's always a different girl in the back of the scooter, though it looks like it's the same scene.
Yes. And it was really well shot.
It was, yeah.
But yeah, I could just, I was watching it going, I can hear Trish grinding her teeth right now.
I don't know if it would have bothered her so much, because she probably really loves Billy Crystal.
Yes, I'm sure she does. But yeah, just it's one of those things that I don't know how audience would react to it nowadays.
Yeah, you know, in the more PC culture, maybe there's the exploitation aspects of that, but I don't know. Is everybody running around Miami in bikinis? And they sure make it seem like that.
Key West, having been there, pretty much.
Oh man, that sounds awesome. I mean, terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there in a long time, mind you, but I have been there, and they still have their annual festival where it's not just bikinis, it's full on nudity sometimes.
And they didn't stay?
Key West is amazing. I mean, if it wasn't for hurricanes, I'd probably go live there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess I'd have to probably leave during the fall just go somewhere else, avoid all the rain.
Well, the funny thing is the hurricane season is also the time of year when you ideally want to be somewhere warm like Florida. Mm-hmm. But yes, you have hurricanes.
Yeah. I mean, downside to good weather is, you got to weather the occasional hurricane.
Yep. let's see. Snowstorms, hurricanes. Snowstorms, hurricanes. Yeah. Snow melts. Hurricanes end after a couple of days.
Yeah. Well, we just got through a big stretch of hot weather here, and though we're not nearly as prone to it as in the central part of the United States, we'll get high wind gusts that can sometimes turn into tornadoes, but it's a lot rarer in Canada than it is in central U.S.,
yes.
So it's certainly not the same problem, but yeah, we're dealing with windstorm today.
Yep.
So if you hear some in the background, that's what that is. We might be being blown away like the witches we are. I'll get you, my pretty.
Wrong movie. Dun, 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 dun. Billy Crystal, we're not.
No, I wish I was.
I miss Billy Crystal.
I do too. He hasn't really been very active, and he could be if he wants to. But you know, he kind of made his fortune on some of these other like small films. He kind of works when he wants to.
Yep.
He didn't.
He always kind of did,
and he could have just kept making hit after hit. I don't know why he didn't. I mean, I don't know why there wasn't a sequel to this. I did read that several were proposed, but him and Gregory Hines were like, nope, they're not up to snuff. So it never happened.
Well, and I could see that
proposed title was Running Still.
Yeah, no, I both of these actors, I mean, Crystal's not known for sequels anyhow. Well, he did City Slickers 2, and he also did Analyze That, right? Mm. So he has done a couple, but yeah, I think that he's really particular about the projects. I mean, because really, if you really look at Crystal's body of work, aside from Analyze That, all of his work's pretty solid,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, there's no real duds in there.
Yeah, I think he's very particular.
Yeah.
Very particular.
And I think maybe that's where Analyze That was kind of his breaking point. It's like, well, wow, I did a shitty movie.
Let's not do that again.
Right? Right. I mean, it's possible, right?
Yeah.
Right? Maybe that's my sign that it's time for me to hang up the gloves.
Well, I mean, he's still very active in comedy and stuff.
Yes, but
I don't know if he's doing even any stand-up anymore, but he's certainly very active in keeping that going. And
oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem like the kind of man who could just stop working.
Yeah.
Right? But I think he's sort of chosen to focus his efforts elsewhere.
Yeah. And I don't know what they are because I didn't research it. But hey, I'm guessing you will want to hear a trailer right now.
Sure, why not?
All right.
Let me tell you something. When you've been cops this long, you are not fit for anything else.
We're looking for some new career challenges.
Yeah, something with a future. Show me another career they let you shoot people.
Give us your money.
You're mugging us?
I don't believe it.
You better believe it or you're dead.
Oh, come on, let us keep the driver's licenses and the snapshots.
And our badges.
I can't believe that you missed all six shots.
What are you talking about? I hit the windshield six times in a row.
I'm the one who made him swerve.
Oh, you made him swerve?
Yes, sir.
You always aim low anyway.
Oh, good. Nagging me now. Nagging is good. You owe me $10 that I never said anything.
You want it now?
Yeah, I
want it now!
Did I come at a bad time?
Follow that car!
Well, now you're gonna criticize my driving?
Well, just that you get to do all the dangerous stuff and I get to parallel park.
We love this movie
so much. I, you know, the problem I have today is I don't want to remake this movie, and it should never be remade. I mean, yeah,
it stands together so well.
I mean, like, it's dated, but it's still so solid.
As soon as I watched it, I'm like, this was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because it's so good, it's so tight, and I don't know anybody could. There's not much I'd redo on this, to be honest.
I mean,
I'm not. I haven't really got an angle in mind other than like some casting, but I mean, it's kind of pitch perfect. Which is, there's obviously room for improvement though, because IMDb only gives it a 6.5 out of 10. Which actually, I guess, isn't not bad, but
it's not bad. I'm considering it, again, its age.
Mm.
You do find that a lot of these movies from the '80s, when they're getting viewed by a younger audience, which are typically the people who are probably doing IMDb ratings and stuff like that for viewer ratings, they're not going to relate to some of the topical humor of the time. Like us as people who saw it, most likely in the theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did.
I thought through, like, some of the gags. Like, there wasn't anything that I thought was too dated as far as what was going on in the dialogue.
No, as far as the dialogue goes, no, because it was again,
it's just more life in the '80s more than anything else.
Yeah, the look and feel of it, and mm-hmm. and some of those '80s tropes that don't stand up so well anymore, like the Latin drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's a very much an 80s trope that...
Yeah, and I think that may be something I would beef up. They even mention, like, he's a cog in the wheel. Like, if he loses his drugs, he might be dead.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they were all that interested in trying to arrest him, because it probably was going to get him killed if he didn't deliver on the drugs that he received. So, you know, there's obviously some Colombians involved in there that are handing them that are way further up the ladder. So you could actually have some proper conflict with the DEA and this local Chicago police department.
Yeah, that would have made it a little more interesting. One big flaw that I saw in it was our two sort of up and coming rookies mm-hmm. were working for the DEA at the beginning of the movie, and now they're cops.
Yeah, it's almost like they got demoted.
Yeah. Yeah, which I guess kind of would have made a certain amount of sense in the sense that this work that they'd done as undercover had gotten sort of ruined.
Yeah, especially right. when the two cops, Hines and Crystal, make the caller, despite their bumbling into this pretty haphazardly.
which actually is very out of character for them, because even though they're kind of goofy and
they know
sloppy,
when to call the backup.
They're not very prone to that at all. There's a great bit later on in the movie about that, actually.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't do the backup and don't follow procedure. When they do, it backfires on them. That's when they have no pants.
Yes, yeah, wearing those long johns is hilarious. And the unmarked police car.
Yeah. The unmarked police car that got marked.
Yes. But yeah, they're not dumb. They're actually very astute cops.
Yeah,
right. They're just very unorthodox. So for them to make a mistake like that, I mean, I know it was a plot device,
mm-hmm.
but I almost wonder if that's one of the things that could be sort of tightened up and fixed so it makes more sense.
Yeah, and these aren't violent people. They handle things very glibly through dialogue, and you know, we might flash a gun or two or their badges or whatever, but that generally gets the job done until they have to get into a chase. And the chases are pretty good. You know, they get a foot chase or the on the rails chase.
Yes. Yeah, and actually, that was a really entertaining to watch.
Yeah. Right. I can imagine on the big screen that rails chase might have given people some vertigo.
Yeah, because the point of view stuff was really quite something.
Yeah.
Right. It was fun because when they took the shots of the tires and they all had the sort of that standard black steel rims, and when earlier in the movie, it was one of those oopses that you see in movies sometimes. It's like,
yeah, well, we got to make the car actually fit on the rails.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, they could have skipped the close-ups of those.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it was pretty glaring, actually.
But yeah, maybe that's where your remake lies, is the more of the conflict with the DEA and divisional conflicts, trying to make this collar on Gonzalez.
Yeah, I'd almost maybe not make the two DEA agents who end up rescuing them at that first time, leave them as DEA agents.
Yeah.
Right.
Rather than these trainees that were there competing for the same collar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That would certainly, I think, make more sense.
Yeah.
Right. And you could still have that fun scene in there in the station there, where they're sitting up there at the desks, acting like all hot shit because they're federal officers and these guys are local cops, and maybe there's some serious arrogance happening there, right? To sort of enhance that tension between the two teams.
Yeah, and I think that would change the dynamic quite well. Yeah. And then you can have the captain arguing with their superior as well.
You can add that element. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like where that's kind of going, because yeah, it doesn't change the story, but it tightens up some of the small holes in the story.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I like the ex-wife angle for Billy Crystal. There's this jealousy subplot that his ex-wife is getting remarried to a boring dentist, and through excitement and becoming a hostage, she goes, what dentist? That's how that story ends. And it doesn't seem to be given a whole lot of time. And it's just suddenly like, oh, you rescued me. The dentist would have never rescued me.
Yeah,
we never see the dentist.
We never do see the dentist.
No,
that's
that's right.
Fuck buddy.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. She's a fuck buddy.
Yeah. The married fuck buddy.
Yeah.
She must have been.
Well, she wasn't married. He was her boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The attached one.
Yes. Yeah. She I mean, she was a complete throwaway character.
She was, yeah.
Like the only reason she was in there was to set up the scene where the two rookies get tricked into arresting her boyfriend. That's that's that whole long setup. That's what it was.
Yeah. Now, here, maybe we could beef that up a little bit. Maybe one of the boyfriends is one of the DEA agents, just upping the ante of these guys fucking with each other.
Possibly.
I could just see these guys trying to get in the way of each other any way they could.
And I mean, that's what they were doing to begin with, right? But
I think there should be a little more motivation, especially if it's drawn up by that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something, because that's one of the few things that bothered me about the movie was how, I mean, I love the long game on it, love the long game on it, because that starts early in the movie, and then it's near the end when you get the payoff on this very arrogant lawyer, and he's a lawyer, right, being set up and taken away unfairly, right? You know what, you could twist it up, you could still have him in there, but he is legitimately involved with the guys, like it actually turns out that
he's
turn out
Gonzalez's lawyer.
Yeah.
Oh, see, there you go. That would be a nice tie back.
Yeah, but you don't know that. It's an accident, right?
Yeah, it's an accident.
It starts out as a joke that actually turns out to a payoff.
Oh, I like it.
I think that would
keep him back to being a lawyer. Then, okay, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, because then you can still have that fun setup, right, where they're trying to misdirect them, but it turns out that's how it sort of all kind of wraps back to where they go, these guys are up to something, and come back to that scene in the bar. Somebody gave us this tip about this lawyer, right? We think it was you guys. What's going on? Why would you just give us the tip and not take it yourself?
Yeah.
Right? That could be some great suspicious dialogue.
You know, part of me during the movie, and it had been a long time since I'd seen it, so when they did Aunt Rose's funeral, I was still carrying a criminal with them to the funeral.
And is stolen $50,000.
Yeah, and is stolen $50,000. And he inherits $40,000 from Aunt Rose. But part of me kept thinking that was a setup, and that Gonzalez gave him the money to just get them the fuck out of Miami and get him out of his hair. Like, I don't know why I kept thinking that while I was watching the movie. And then I'm like, no, it's just legitimate inheritance. Okay.
And I think it's probably because there is that attempted payoff later on in the movie.
Yeah.
So you kind of, maybe they just kind of just mesh together in your mind.
Right? Yeah. I don't know why I thought that, but it'd been a long, long time since I'd seen this movie. Yeah.
See, and as soon as you said we were going to do this movie, I couldn't help thinking about our friend Mike.
Oh, yeah, because he used to run around going, oh, no, they don't pay me anymore.
Yes, all the time.
And he did it before I'd ever seen the movie, so I didn't know what the fuck he was doing most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did it so well, too.
He did.
Yeah. He does that, oh, no, so, so well. Yeah, Yeah, no. So yeah, when you mentioned, I'm like, yeah, I can see this movie again now.
Yeah, but you know, when you think about what was coming out at the time, and the Lethal Weapons, and what other big cop, Beverly Hills Cop stuff.
Yeah, and actually, further down in the rabbit hole, there's somebody talked about having watched them both back to back.
Yeah,
just to sort of do like their own sort of comparison, and said they're so much fun to watch together.
Yeah.
Right, and I can see that.
And it is. It's kind of a meshing of like that Beverly Hills Cop humor with the buddy cop of those Lethal Weapon movies.
Yeah. I mean, Lethal Weapon had its elements of humor as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're very funny movies, but they're really dark.
Yeah.
In their themes as well, where there's no darkness in this at all. These guys except love for
the
each
city
other.
Itself. Chicago is one ugly city in the 80s.
Oh, it's really gray.
Yeah, it's really gray. And I mean, part of it was because it was set in winter.
Right? Yeah, well, yeah. They intentionally were, I think, going for that look.
To contrast with Florida,
and
right?
If you see scenes of snow, yeah, they that was all just fake foam. But yeah, I'm sure that was to contrast with Florida. And you noticed how the colors start really brightening up in the Florida scenes. So yes, that was very intentional.
Yeah. And there's so many great scenes in here, like that scene, that setup scene when they first get to Florida, and they're talking to that young woman who says, yeah, we're watching the sunset. We do it every night.
What? Yeah, everybody's thinking, like, is this somebody being mugged? Like, is there a parade?
They're naturally suspicious nature, right? Yeah. And it sets up this change in their attitudes and personalities.
Yeah.
Because for the first time in who knows how long, they're actually relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Right? And seeing the rest of the world around them.
Right? Yeah. And they get to kind of like it at first.
Yeah.
But once they get back to work, they realize how much they love their work.
Initially, it's that dream of, like, owning that bar. And not getting shot at. So they start being careful. They start checking out their bulletproof vests.
Yeah.
And I love the scene where Billy Crystal gets shot by one of those rookie cops.
Yeah.
Wasn't even a criminal. It was another fucking cop.
Very funny, actually.
And he's like, go on without me. You run the bar without me. Okay, I'll run the bar without you. You were going to run the bar without me? You were going to go to Florida without me?
Yeah, that's a great line. And I love the bit where Gregory Hines says, this place better get robbed a lot. Just watch it. If you haven't seen this movie, especially for our younger audience who maybe just aren't aware of it as the gem that it is.
Yeah, because I think this movie outside is kind of forgotten now.
Yeah.
You know, you think about the great 80s cop movies, and this just doesn't seem to be on the lists anymore.
Which is really odd because, I mean,
because it wasn't a franchise.
That's probably largely it. Is it was a very much a standalone movie. It predates the Die Hard movies mm-hmm. by a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right around the time of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, and there's some good action stuff in this movie.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. Like,
it's superficial next to the dialogue is way, way more interesting in this movie.
Yeah, the dialogue is what makes this movie fun.
It's almost like when you watch Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and he's just never breaks that kind of note, and the rest of the world's kind of normal around him.
That's kind of, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's Pet Detective, but
no, it's far superior to Pet Detective.
Yeah. It's these guys almost exist in their own little world together, and everything else around them still operates like normal.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so charming to watch.
Yeah,
their relationship. I mean, when Danny shows up at Ray's place right after he's picked up his fuck buddy, and just walks in and just turns on the motorcycle that's in Ray's living room, turns on the sirens and wakes them both up. I'm like, that's the kind of relationship they have, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just walking into your place and I'm going to wake you up. I don't care who's in your bed. it's
fun. And nobody's really bad. They're like irked, and it's always, I think, a little bit of one-upmanship with these guys.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's just sheer joy to watch.
It's like, shit, you fucked with me, now I'm going to fuck with you, right? in that way that only best friends can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, no, I really, really like the dynamic. I can't stress it enough. And it's too bad that Gregory's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, he was taken way too early.
Yeah, he was. Because, we'll never, ever get to see these two on screen together again with this kind of chemistry, which is honestly a little heartbreaking because...
It's a shame that we never got to see them do other movies together.
Yeah, it didn't have to be a sequel to this.
Yeah, but it just... They were so good that it's kind of begged to, like, let's see more. Like, this
it could have been one of those great comedy teams.
Yeah, right? This is that Nick Frost, Simon Pegg pairing.
Yeah, Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello kind of chemistry. It's that strong.
Yeah.
And it was, it just kind of got wasted.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get wasted because we got this one great film from the two of them.
Yeah, but it's definitely not wasted. Yeah.
But it had like so much more potential there, yeah.
And maybe they just had good chemistry on film, but maybe they didn't have it in real life. Who knows?
It's possible.
It's possible.
It is entirely possible.
That's the stuff you never get to read about. I don't want to work with
that. Well, nowadays you do.
But these days, back then, not so much.
Not so much.
If they were A-list actors, you probably would have heard about it. Yeah, if they weren't in the top of the box office, they weren't in the National Enquirer.
No, they certainly weren't, or whatever the other rags were at the time. But
exactly.
We need to talk about how we remake it because, the story itself is a pretty straightforward story.
Yeah, well, I think we got a little bit of an angle, little bits anyway, worth, I think, maybe seeing who Gonzalez is answerable to.
Yeah.
So it kind of motivates him a little bit more to get his drugs back and his money back.
Yeah, and because I changed it up. I got rid of the Latin American drug dealer trope.
Yeah, either that or we just, we have him in conflict. It would be interesting to see him in conflict with the other Chicago crime families.
Well, and that's exactly it because, there's some dialogue at the beginning of the movie.
He's aspiring to be the new kingpin.
Yeah, he is, absolutely, because Snake says that Gonzalez's old boss had an accident. He got stabbed 18 times or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. He fell on a knife 18 times. Another great line. Right. So, obviously Gonzalez is trying to move up the ladder. And he's quite well known in certain parts of Chicago as well. Because
really well liked within the Latin American community.
Well, not even the Latin American. It's just sort of that the less cop friendly community.
Yeah,
right. Because when they're driving around his Mercedes to try and draw him out, he's driving up and there's the your black kids playing basketball in the park trope. Right, and they're all going, "Hey, it's Gonzalez." They go to talk to him, and then they find out it's these two cops that they know.
Yeah,
right. And they're like, "Oh shit, it's Ray and Danny." I can't remember their last names all of a sudden, but I remember their first names for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, that's like I'm impressed. Yeah, it was Ray Hughes and Danny Costanza.
Costanza.
We'll just call Ray and Danny.
Ray and Danny is so much easier. And then there's where the breakdancing kids are like breakdancing on the corner. They see Gonzalez's car and they go to talk to him. And then they see again it's the cops and they just they walk away. And they're
having a lot of fun doing it.
They're having a lot of fun doing it. And that's the other thing I want to fix in this movie is Gonzalez is really popular in this community. Mm-hmm. Why?
Well,
we need the why.
Well, there's a little bit because when the priest and the nun are used as drug mules.
Yes, which is
but they don't know. Like they break open the statues and there's just sand in them, and then they figure out it's the statues themselves that are made of the drugs that have to be ground up again. They're completely unaware they're being used as mules, and they even mention what they've been doing, what Gonzalez has been contributing.
For the church in Colombia.
Yeah.
But why, what's he doing in the community that makes people...
Yeah, and I think maybe you should have something like that. And that is a struggle, too, because, the cops aren't liked, and they're trying to help that community, and then the criminal's helping them more. So there is a conflict of, are you helping by taking this guy off the streets?
Yes.
And yeah, absolutely, because you're taking the drugs off the street. But
at the same time, what else is happening?
And that's an interesting angle, but does that make the movie a little more serious? At the same time, we had a lot of comedy within Lethal Weapon movies, and they could be pretty dark and serious. Yeah. So I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, no, that little bit of commentary there is does doing good things justify doing bad things?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you could have that, just a little bit of that. In there.
Yeah, I think that's worth exploring.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be much. Because this is a lot of movie.
But, yeah.
You can condense, there are parts of it where you can condense it down a little bit to get that extra 5 minutes just to show why, what Gonzalez does for the community.
Yeah. Right?
What that is,
this movie's really busy. Like, it's constantly go, go, go.
Yes.
And it's usually happening in the dialogue.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much had happened within the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, and the setup for the last, like the first act is, it's really interesting actually because I don't remember the first act being as long as it was.
Yeah.
Right, where before they go to Florida.
They on a stakeout, play, get in the basketball game, do the bust, grab, lose Gonzalez, but grab Snake. Snake doesn't want to talk, and then there's that great bit of, you know, he's just going to sit on the case, and they're like, well, you're going to be really uncomfortable for a while. We can go get our warrant, or you can just show us what's in the case, and it's not illegal to own money. Yeah. But they pull him in anyway. But he wasn't going to rat on anybody, and they're like, all right. And Billy Crystal just goes to the outside and yells to the basketball players, hey, as upstanding citizens, you should watch out for this guy who has $50,000 in cash in this bad neighborhood. They're like, we're going to mug his ass now.
Yeah. Yeah, genius. And he didn't break any laws, as far as I know, by doing that.
No, it's crazy, but he totally put that guy at risk. So the only way to protect him was to arrest him.
Yep.
Take him in.
And you know what? I do have to say,
and they didn't have probable cause to do it until Snake's like, fuck. So he had to hit him. Had to hit Ray.
Yeah.
Or no, it was he hit Danny, but doesn't matter.
Yeah. Either way, yeah. It's he's got such great chemistry with them both on the screen as well. Like, yeah. You love the scenes that they're like all three of them are in together. That first 15 minutes where all three of them and the banter between all of them is so witty and it's so on point for timing.
Yeah, and it's a shame because he gets bumped off so casually.
Yes,
and I think that should have been played out a little bit more. I think there should have been like, hey, you've been with the cops, you've been ratting, that sort of thing. That, you know, because you kind of like Snake.
You kind of do. And
for all of his bumbling.
Yeah, and that's kind of why, like I said, that's part of one of the things I did want to change a little bit is because you do like him. Mm-hmm. And he's fun to watch. And the way his ignominious end is part of my issue with it. And the whole setup there where they kind of walk blindly into what they should have known better kind of situation bothers me a little bit. Mm. The scene's important in it because it introduces you to two other foils in the movie, and it also introduces you to the Gonzalez character, and how heartless he is, mm-hmm. right? Like how motivated he is to just do what he wants to get done. How do you change that to make it work? I don't know. I mean, I love the bit where they walk in and he's talking into the mic. They're both talking into the wire. I love that bit. Mm-hmm. Right? But how do you set it up so that they aren't quite so clueless walking in?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They might be underprepared, but not clueless. Right? Because, yeah, that's...
Yeah, and I mean, and we're talking about, like, again, going back to Gonzalez and how much the citizens within the neighborhood really like him. So that's worth building because, I mean, that kid who's constantly giving yep. Ray the finger.
Yes, another great bit.
They're saying a lot with little, you know, like little bits, and it says a lot about what's going on around them.
It does. Because, yeah, clearly he's well loved, but yeah. You never get a sense of why.
Yeah, and that's right? where we need...
Where does this loyalty come from?
And that's the problem. You kind of have to cut away from the shoulders of Ray and Danny a bit to explore that.
You know what? There's a great opportunity for it right in the scene where he's got them up in the cab by the garbage truck and he's trying to bribe them, mm-hmm. right? That's where he can have his exposition, where he can say, you know what? I do this for the community. I do this for the community. This for the community, right? So I deal a few drugs. Look at what I do in return,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that would be sort of where you would get that chance where he brags it up. Right, it's like this community loves me, and this is why they love me, and that's right before the scene where they steal his car.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's a perfect place for it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah, that'd be a good spot for it.
Yeah. Right, because it would also enhance his really show his arrogance as well. Right there, where he starts bragging about himself before he's about to kill these two cops. It's like that. It's like the James Bond villain show off scene. Right, mm-hmm. There's always that show off scene.
There is, yeah, yeah. Right?
And this would be the perfect place for it.
Yeah, it gives the opportunity to buy the cops before he does away with them. So he's not super vicious, but these guys have been a thorn in his side for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's like, well, let's see if they take the money first before we throw them in the the dumpster.
Exactly.
In the garbage truck.
Exactly. And then you can always justify his actions too, right? Try to justify it so that they can try to help them justify taking the money.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like a perfect setup. Like that scene is like built for that bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's spot is this perfect spot for that kind of thing.
Yeah. I love how the little extra precautions they take after coming back from Miami almost get them killed.
Yes.
Almost every time.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, we got the bulletproof windows that don't roll down. So now they can't roll them down to shoot it back at the bad guys. Yeah. And again, they couldn't roll them down to get out of the car when it was getting crushed.
Yes. Yeah.
Until the window actually popped out.
Yeah. Which, yeah, that was great. Like, that was set up so well. So well. Right. And of course, the scene where they call for backup, mm-hmm. and it's a horribly embarrassing moment for them because they've had to give up their pants in order to save somebody.
Yeah, the vests do come in handy, though.
Yes. Yeah, especially when Danny gets shot by Tony.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another name I remembered. Holy shit.
Oh, jeez. What was his partner's name?
Frank.
Oh, my God. Well, look at you. You had your Wheaties this morning.
Apparently. Apparently. Damn. I'm patting myself on the back right now, folks.
Nice.
Because anybody's listening, you know that I'm fucking terrible with names.
No, I'm always correcting everybody.
Yes.
If I don't do it myself, but at least it's right in front of me, so yeah. I can correct myself.
Yes. You also have no excuse.
Nah, but I'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
That's like the episode when we were trying to remember that Star Trek episode from when Harlan Ellison passed away, and I'm like, I could not remember the name of the goddamn episode about an hour after you left. And I even said Elizabeth Taylor, and I'm like, oh, fuck, it was Joan Collins. Yeah. And I knew that. And it was called The City on the Edge of Forever, by the way.
It's because he texted me about 35 minutes later, says the episode name was...
He's like, well, you can just yank it out. And I'm like, nah, the Trekkies will go nuts if I leave it in. And I'll enjoy that.
Yes. That's our way of trolling you all.
It is. I was totally trolling. And then you disappointed me by not bitching at me at all.
Are you listening?
Just the Trekkies aren't, apparently.
Yeah. Apparently not. Well, you know, maybe now we'll start getting heck for it.
Yeah. They're like, you deliberately left it in when you knew it was wrong.
Well, we didn't know it was wrong. We just we were honest and admitted we didn't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I did say I didn't remember at the time. And I used to get Joan Collins and Elizabeth Taylor mixed up all the time.
Yeah, I can see how they're very similar in appearance. Completely different grades of actors.
Oh, for sure.
Completely different.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think it was their reputations more than anything else that got me mixed up.
Yeah, they both had some pretty larger-than-life reputations.
Yeah. What else can we do here?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing.
I mean, I liked the idea. I like the idea of having the lawyer being tied to Gonzales, because there's a lot more comedy we can add to that moment, as you know, these guys keep pestering them for the wrong reason.
Yes.
until then they just feel even better about it.
It's like, well, damn, we were right without even knowing it.
Well, yeah, your boyfriend was representing Gonzales. Well, I'm glad we messed with you. I could just see Ray going, but when this lawyer walks in with Gonzales, I'm sleeping with your girlfriend. Just flat out saying it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'd be perfect. Because that's very much a Ray line, too.
It is.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah.
With the double fingers on top of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to add insult to injury, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do like that idea. And like I said, you don't know. Like, nobody knows that until after he's been arrested and they start interrogating him and he starts freaking out a little bit and starts telling him what he does know.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to fix Danny's ex-wife bit too.
I casted it. Well,
I mean, it does give him a bit of a reason to go to Florida and want to stay, because he hasn't gotten not a lot of reason to stay in Chicago.
And you know, I liked her character. That's the thing.
Yeah, she was good.
I like the way she's attached to Ray, and she's never missed Ray's birthday.
Yeah,
and she's still in love with Danny. And you can tell right from the get-go that she's still in love with him.
Yeah. We don't see why and what those moments are of what got them separated in the first place, other than her saying, you're like, you're never serious.
Yeah.
Ever. And maybe that's all it has to be, but...
Yeah, because there's that great scene where they're in his apartment and she's saying, I never stopped loving you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just couldn't stay with you anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And then he says, you want to go to bed? She goes, yes, no. So awesome. Yeah, and yeah, you know, I cast it because I really liked her and I liked the dynamic. When they're in Florida, I'd like to see, I mean, they've been apart for a while, right?
Yeah.
So
maybe instead of one of those silly montages that they do in this movie, and there are two or three,
yes,
you could actually have them maybe Ray, when he finds out his ex-wife is getting remarried, is looking at an old photo album, and there's not a serious picture in the bunch, and that kind of gives you a clue.
Yeah,
it's subtle, but
yeah, it just sort of adds to it, right?
Yeah, and give him a little bit of a somber moment.
Yeah. Right, and I mean, she talks about how the seriousness of his job, combined with his being juvenile all the time, just she couldn't handle that contrast, mm-hmm. right? Because I think that's what they were getting at, is that he's on a job where his life is at risk every single day, but he's never serious. He doesn't take it seriously. Right? Mm-hmm. She doesn't understand that that's how he deals with it, right? And I think that's why it works so well at the end. I don't know if you need to explain it any more than that, because at the end, no. I think she realizes that, having been in that jeopardy,
yeah.
realizing that the humor is how he deals with it.
Yeah, I mean, the psychological implications, they're not really in the movie, but, I mean, it's there subtly, so you can play it up just a wee bit.
Yeah. And you know what, maybe we're over analyzing this movie, maybe. Because we do that.
Sure. Well, that's how we get to a place where we can find a remake.
Anyway, yes, somewhere. Right. So, I mean, maybe emphasizing it a little bit. I mean, you're right. Maybe just a 30-second shot of him leafing through that photo album or watching a video. Right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, if it's modern day, yeah, maybe it's instead of a photo album, it's flicking through his pictures Facebook. On his Facebook or, yeah, her Facebook, yeah. maybe. And you can see him goofing off in everything and every vacation. And then you can just see this, like, embarrassed look on her face most of the time.
Yeah, right? There's something simple like that. And so you still get that sort of understanding at the end.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't need to be super deep, but maybe just emphasize it just a little bit more. Right, and then of course she can.
Yeah, and you kind of see it on Billy Crystal's face, like, yeah, this is bothering him a bit.
Oh yeah, he's still totally in love with her. He never wanted to.
And she says, like, wish me well, and he goes, I do, you know, I do.
And that explains all. It would explain actually that feeds the series of girls in Florida as well, because he doesn't want anybody else.
Yeah, this is the case. This is like, I'm sure a lot of our male audience has gone through a shitty breakup or whatever with somebody they really cared for, and then they went on they had their wild days in between before they found the next one that hopefully went better. But, you know, everybody's kind of got those stories where, you know, you just want to,
of course,
you'd go out there and feel a little bit better about yourself, and that's how men deal with rejection in a way,
yeah. I don't think... anybody's ever been as successful as Danny and Ray.
No, that is movie successful.
That is beyond movie successful. Right? That is like fantasy casting successful. Right?
Yeah.
Because they are inordinately gifted at picking up women.
And maybe it's just that sense of humor gets them going. But
yeah, yeah, but
God knows I was never that as successful. But
yeah.
I had my wild days, but the movie's like... times 100.
Yeah, this really is the magic of movies.
Yeah.
Right? Especially considering, I mean, these guys are not your average Hollywood-looking guy either. Both of them have a very interesting, unique look, but neither of them are particularly ruggedly handsome. Right?
Yeah.
Like they're not the guys that would normally be picking up, the kind of women they're picking up in Florida.
Yeah, well, Gregory Hines looks like he's stoned all the time.
I think he might have been.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Yeah, but yeah, he does have a very unique look, that's for sure. But yeah, again, they're not. I mean, Stephen Bauer and John Grease are better looking men. Like, they are more traditionally handsome.
I don't know. John Grease also looks like he's stoned all the time.
Again, probably was. yeah, but again, he's definitely, maybe it's because he's younger. But yeah, they're the sort of younger, more attractive version, which is the whole joke, right?
Yeah, and maybe that's a little my casting. I kind of bumped up their age by about 8 years or so, and got them in their mid 40s rather than the 30s, because like. To make that, you know, 16 years on the force seem a little more legitimate, because they do come off as veterans, but they still look really young.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I still kept them in their late 30s.
Yeah. When I was starting to think actors that were coming to mind that could kind of deliver that snappy dialogue and be good at it, I kept landing in the 40s. That's fine. When they were initially looking at actors, they probably were in their 50s or 60s. So,
yeah. I think one of my cast members is actually in his 40s, but can play younger. Typically does play younger. Yeah. And my rookies are still reasonably young because I want them to be younger agents. I want that inexperience to sort of show through still, right? Because I like, there's that bit of dialogue where it's like, there were us 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I like that bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So you want to have a little bit of that in there still.
Yeah.
Because they always have kind of this begrudging respect for them. They don't like them because they know what assholes they were.
Yeah, they're just like them.
Yes. Yeah. And I kind of want to keep that dynamic.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can still have that even if they're a little older. So yeah. I did keep the other two cops a little younger.
Yeah, yeah, just a little bit younger, yeah.
Yeah, I totally did. Yeah, because I even subconsciously I knew that that dynamic was important.
It absolutely is, especially for that end scene where they share the cigar with them.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you guys got potential. Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah, stop shooting other cops and you're fine.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I can't believe they didn't get reprimanded for that.
Well,
and like they weren't even sorry. They did. There was no apology at all.
No, because there's an antagonism there that it's really important and it works really well. But at the same time,
like that's pretty serious.
It's pretty serious. But they wouldn't have gotten in trouble unless Danny reported them.
Yeah,
or Danny Ray had said, you know what, that fucker shot me.
Which they could have. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But if they just let it slide for whatever reason, then there would have been no reprimand, right?
Yeah.
Although when turning in the bulletproof vest that has a bullets in it.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, if you keep them as DEA agents, that goes in a whole other direction.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, if you're getting shot by an opposing...
Not opposing, but another agency.
Another agency, and they can there can be usually some conflict, at least on screen.
Yes.
We see that in most movies where you've got two different agencies going for the same
when you have a federal agency stepping on the toes of a local agency, there's always conflict.
Yeah.
It's just it's inevitable.
That is one of those movie TV tropes.
Yes, yeah. We watch a lot of crime shows at home, and typically local agencies love it when the FBI comes in on something that's big because they have resources that local agencies just don't have.
It's true. I can totally see like Danny and Ray choosing not to use that or trying to use that in a sneaky way so like their competition doesn't find out.
Yes, of course.
Like it should be antagonistic.
Yeah,
so.
it has to be in order for the end scene to pay off.
Yeah.
Right? Which, and that end scene is so, so 80s. So 80s. I'm sorry. There's the scene where he's asking her to jump from the elevator where the door won't open over to his elevator. And she's like, jump, jump, jump. Just fucking step over because they were about 2 feet apart.
So much jeopardy.
Yes.
Yeah, that could change.
Yeah, there has to be some more risk for her.
Yeah.
In that particular scene.
Like, yeah, I'd because forgotten she was even in any jeopardy at all.
Yes, because when she jumps over, she jumps clear all the way over the rail in the elevator and lands in his arms. Like, she doesn't even... Like, she could have stepped over quite comfortably.
I mean, in that scene, I was like, looking at the movie, and I'm like, don't overdo it.
Yeah.
You might overshoot.
Exactly, yeah. So that you have to sort of just tweak a little bit to make...
Yeah, the jeopardy is jumping too far.
Yes. And Ray will be in your way. Not Ray, Danny will be in your way. So he's going to stop you from going too far anyhow. So,
exactly.
Yeah, you're not at risk at all. Right? I mean, I think it's supposed to emphasize her panic.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it would be funnier is if Danny was just going, you can just step over. I'll grab your hand. You can just step over. We're that close. You can just step over, right? And I mean that tone that Crystal had, or as it was capable of delivering.
Yeah, actually, you know, it would be good. It would be maybe one of those outdoor elevators, you know, the ones that run up the side of the building rather than interior of the building. And that would add a lot more jeopardy.
It would add a lot more jeopardy.
And then maybe it's like, and it would make good use of the window washing equipment that he uses anyway.
Yes.
So why don't you do it on the outside of the building and then it's far more jeopardy.
Yeah, it creates far more tension because, yeah, some of those outdoor elevators are certainly further apart than they were in that particular shot. But at the same time, they missed a great moment for a comedic beat there, sure. Right? Where it's like, calm down. You can just step over, honey.
That would be good. Yeah, either you up the tension and the action of the scene or you up the comedy of
yes.
it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It's like you do this every day. It's like skipping over a crack on the street.
Yeah. 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 It's 3 feet.
Yeah.
You can step that far.
You can fall that far. The likelihood of something going wrong is fairly minimal. Yeah. We don't even need a stunt actor for this.
No, exactly. I think that would actually be
actually
funnier.
Him just breaking the wall for a moment saying, we don't need a stunt actor for this.
That would be kind of funny, actually.
It's a Deadpool moment.
It is a Deadpool moment, which is funny because I cast somebody from Deadpool 2.
Oh, one or two?
Two.
Deadpool 2.
Okay. Yeah, I said Deadpool 2.
But I thought you meant 2 as in also.
As in also, yeah. No, I realized that. I'm like, wait a minute. I see where he's going with that. Yes, puns. No, from the Deadpool sequel.
Yes. Cool. Well, let's hear it.
Okay.
Why not? We're at that time.
We're at that time. Okay, I have to bring up my list. Okay, so I had a little fun with the casting, actually. I'm going to start with Captain Logan because this actor popped into my head the other day. I'm like, I've never cast him in anything, and I love him. He's a little bit older than Dan Hedaya was in this one, but that's okay. The older grizzled chief or captain is fine. I'm with David Patrick Kelly,
okay,
who you might remember from The Crow and Warriors and Twin Peaks and a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, they're a really great character actor who's a lot of fun on screen. And he always plays sort of that weird, odd character. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to give him the chance to play the grizzled police chief, who's a little bit weird because he's a little bit weird. Captain Logan is a little bit weird. For my Ray, I went with John Cho. I think I cast him like fairly recently in something else, but he's so good at sort of that comedic beat or the comedic comedy. He's so good at
Definitely the buddy comedy.
Buddy comedy type of stuff, yeah. I mean, as evidenced by the long-running Harold Kumar, but he's better than that. And he's also capable of physical work as well. We've seen him do it in things like Star Trek, right? For my Danny Costanza, it's Danny with an I because I cast Ellen Page.
You know, I thought about doing some gender swapping there.
Yeah. And you know what? I wasn't going to, but it's just like Ellen Page just popped into my head. I'm like, I can't let go of it. And I love the dynamic of her being so tiny and John Cho, he's quite a big man. Like, he's quite tall. So I like that juxtaposition of the really tall partner versus the really short partner. And they're both really good at sort of that witty,
sarcastic humor. Could certainly change some of the comedy beats.
Yeah, add something new to it, right? Yeah. And that's why I kind of went that way. Besides, we're in modern times. You are going to have male and female partners.
Sure, right? Absolutely.
And I think it would change the dynamic a little bit because
it would change the sense of humor of it, which I kind of dig. Hell, you could still have Danny and her ex-wife.
I did.
Yeah, I think that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'll go with her ex-wife. I went with Lacey Chabert because... Okay. She's around the right age, and she's way underutilized. She's one of those actresses who is way better than people give her credit for. Mm-hmm. She's like in B films and doing voice roles and stuff like that, but she should be getting more work, I think. I'd like to see her to be in that. For my Detective Frank, I went with Nat Wolff, and I don't know.
You don't know why?
I do know why, but I usually make a note as to what he's been in, and I didn't this time.
Okay, fair.
But yeah, he's an up-and-coming young actor, and he's in his mid to late 20s.
Okay.
And yeah, he's done some light comedy, but mostly more sort of these dramatic action roles. So I thought, yeah, we'd give him a young actors. I always love to try and see, like, seeing these young actors and giving them a chance, right? For my Detective Tony, with an I... I went with, I can't say her name properly, right? It's Zazie Beetz, who played Domino in Deadpool 2.
Oh, okay.
Again, obviously capable of comedic action because she's done it.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie yet.
Unfortunately, I haven't either. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I haven't yet.
But yeah, you got to have some chops if you're going to be keeping up with Deadpool and the snappy banter.
Yes, if you're going to be...
Or just rare and Ryan Reynolds in anything, really.
Exactly, really. you have to be capable at banter.
Yeah.
So I thought she'd be probably pretty... Good cast.
Yeah.
Casting. And again, because you have the male-female partnership for Ray and Danny, I thought the idea of having a male-female partnership for the other one, again, provides that very much that same type of dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. But younger, which is what the whole point of that those two characters was. For my Sebastian Stan, or my Julio... I went with Sebastian Stan.
Let me guess. You went with Sebastian Stan.
Yes, sorry. I had my Wheaties. They've worn off.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah. So Julio's not going to be Julio for me. He's going to be more of a sort of a... Again, I wanted to get rid of that Latin American trope. So
I actually kept him Latin American, but when I thought about, like, oh, he wants to be the Kingpin. Wait a minute, there was a show called Kingpin. We'll get there.
Okay. And then I did cast Snake as well. I went with an actor named Jesse Plemons, who's played kind of he's played the action goofy guy before. He was in Friday Night Lights, the TV series. So I figured, why not? And then for my director, I'm not 100% certain of him, but he does action comedy really well. I went with Matthew Vaughn.
Nice.
Yeah, because he does action comedy so well.
Secret Service.
Secret Service, kick ass.
Yeah.
He tends to be a little more on the sort of heavy action.
Well, I mean, he keeps doing Mark Millar comic books.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he does. They're obviously a very good working partnership there. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see him do something maybe with a little more dialogue, but still have the action bits there. So I think that, yeah, he might have fun with something like that.
Yeah, I dig it. I initially didn't actually cast my Captain Logan. Just thinking about it, I'm like, oh, I haven't done like a cameo in a while, so let's bring in Joe Pantoliano as the Captain Logan, because he'd be awesome at it.
Yes, he would be.
Now that he's an older actor, and I just like how angry he gets in angry scenes.
Yes.
So he'd be good. It just kind of hit me. I'm like, all right, that'll work.
You could have a great Easter egg joke in there too, because he's got so many great background movies in there. So there could be a joke about, do I take the red pill or the blue pill at 2 o'clock or something like that?
Oh, you don't even do it as a question. You just see him take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. But yeah, you could have some fun with that.
Yeah. I like it. Little Easter eggs. Totally cool. Okay. So for the rest of my cast, for my Danny, the Billy Crystal character, I went with Jeremy Renner. Now, when I think, not lately, but when I think about like kind of his earlier part of the film career, when he was doing like Hurt Locker and some TV stuff, like, man, he's really good with dialogue and banter. And I kind of miss seeing him do that on film. And it's kind of just natural part of his personality, and I like to see him that being utilized more, because it's a skill he already possesses.
It's true. I'm a big fan of Jeremy Renner. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of the Graham Norton show clips.
Yeah, they keep trying to make him like this the next action guy to take over some of these franchises, and people aren't really buying it. It's because like he's not the takeover guy. You need to find the role that accentuates his natural personality.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Find the roles for him instead of trying to make roles for him.
Yeah.
Right, because he's completely capable. There's what the heck was that movie with Christian Bale and Jennifer Lawrence, where it's set in the 70s, where they're...
Yeah.
He was great in that. And it wasn't an action film. It was just another dialogue film. And for life, we cannot remember for it. Please shout out and let us know if you remember what it is.
American... Oh, it's like right on the tip of my
tongue. Me too. Right. We'll remember later, and we'll text each other, and then you guys will have to figure it out on your own.
I know I'm close.
Yeah. There we go. But yeah, again, it's a great example. Sorry, I cut off your casting there, but I agree with you.
Right? Yeah. And for my Ray, and like I said, I kind of bumped them up to their 40s a bit, and because I did the younger detectives, which we've agreed now they're going to stay DEA, I kept them in their 20s. So
even larger age difference.
Yeah, it just makes it a little more obvious. I went with the thank you for coming back to the business, Dave Chappelle.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good at it. So yeah. I don't have to sing his praises because he's awesome. I know I kind of wanted another comedian in there. Yeah. You know, okay, yeah, Jeremy Renner isn't, but...
But neither was Gregory Hines.
Neither was Gregory Hines. So now we got that balance back again. Yeah. And I think Dave Chappelle is far more talented than he's given credit for. But maybe he is getting credit for it. I don't know.
He gets credit for it, but he's not getting the offers he used to get because of that break, but he's still working and he's still doing okay. So,
well, he wants to do it on his own terms, and I am totally down with that. I have nothing but respect for that. Okay, so now we go for my DEA agents, and I went with Aaron Taylor Johnson from Kick-Ass and Godzilla.
Which works very well with my director.
Yeah, that's right, as Detective Frank Sigliario. Who cares? He's Detective Frank.
Yeah. That's how I didn't bother with the last name.
Names can change.
Yeah.
Last names can change. Scott Eastwood as Tony, Detective Tony.
I know Aaron Taylor Thomas can do comedic beats because we've seen him do it. Scott Eastwood, I'd like to see how he does with
that. Yeah, and that's just it. I'm like, can he? We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, he played a little bit of a goofy character, or at least he was serious, but that's where the humor kind of came from, was in the Fast and the Furious movies where he was just being too by the book. And maybe that's that'll work. I went with, for Anna, the ex-wife. Yeah. And I guess at the time I was probably still thinking they were younger. But I went with initially with Alicia Vikander, where I'm like, now looking at him, like, that's bad casting.
Yeah, a little bit young, yeah.
Yeah, a little too young. But maybe we can stick her on the back of a moped.
There we go. You can always go with one of your one of your always throwbacks. Is she can still be a little bit younger than Danny. I mean, go with your throwback Olivia Wilde, maybe. I don't know.
Sure. I'm always down for Olivia Wilde.
I know.
Okay, and for Marianne, I wanted to keep her in this movie because now we've made her more important.
I didn't
cast
her because, but I probably should have, but at the time I was thinking she's a throwaway character.
Right? Initially, I thought so too, and then I thought about it. I'm like, well, no, that's important for Ray. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I should put her in there. And I went with Hannah John Kamen. And she plays Ghost from Ant-Man, the new Ant-Man and Wasp movie.
I cast her a couple weeks ago. She's also in Killjoys, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yes, she's a... She's a British actress, surprisingly enough, mm-hmm. even though she's mostly works in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Taylor Johnson is also...
Yeah, I mean, they both do American very, very well, so it's not a concern, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that you've brought Marianne back in, I was going to cast Lucy Liu as Marianne.
Yeah, that'll work.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll just go with that.
Mm-hmm. She's actually older
than
your cast, but that's all right. Yeah. She still looks...
Yeah. And, I mean, John Cho, again, is also... They're of an age, actually, so...
Sure.
Yeah. And they can both play younger.
Yeah. I went with Yancy Arias as Julio, so I kept him Spanish. I mentioned he was from a short-lived but excellent crime show called Kingpin, where it was from the Kingpin family's... as they're coming up and becoming more important in the drug trade and all that. It was really excellent. It was just bad network for the show for such a mature kind of... It felt like an HBO show, but it was like on, I think, CBS or NBC or something at the time. It was really good. He's also been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Bosch recently as well, so you might remember him from those. Kieran Culkin was my snake.
Oh, nicely done.
I wanted somebody who could play slimy, and he just oozes that just looking at him.
He's good at that. He's a really capable young actor.
He is. Actually. I think he's very talented, and I thought that would be pretty cool. I can't think, when I think about dialogue-heavy kind of action comedies, I always go back to Guy Ritchie. He's so good at it.
Well, and that's actually how I ended up with Matthew Vaughn, because I saw that he'd worked with Guy Ritchie on pretty much all of his early stuff.
Yeah, I want him to stop making Sherlock Holmes and King Arthur-type movies and go back to what we love you for.
Yeah. Yeah, go back to the...
Because we know you're good at it, and it seems like you have more fun doing those type of movies.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because, Lock, Stock, and
Snatch and Rock and Roll.
Yeah, yeah, such great, great films. And, again, plenty of action, but really it's about the characters,
mm-hmm.
right? and the dialogue and their interactions. And that's what makes this movie work so well anyhow.
Yeah, and it totally has that aesthetic.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we both leaned in the same direction. I mean, we...
Mm-hmm.
They're buddies, for crying out loud.
Yeah, exactly. They're both cut from the same cloth. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they came up together, really, right? I mean, Vaughn was the producer on Lock, Stock, and mm-hmm. Two Smoking Barrels, as well as Snatch. And
wasn't the Samuel Jackson one Formula
51?
51, yeah.
I didn't see that in his...
I'm not sure if it's either one of them, but it's, again, another producer from Lock, Stock, and Snatch did those, that movie.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you can see it, right?
So they all kind of are, you can see the influence, and all those guys are kind of working from the same spot.
They're the same core conceit, which is really witty dialogue balanced with just enough action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's what we saw here too, is just enough action. And some of the action is not like really heavy action. It's just... It's that insinuation about the potential for violence, mm-hmm. right? Like the scene where they're getting mugged.
Yeah, and I mean, you could totally make that scene with the chase on the L a whole lot better, the L train tracks. And because, first person was a way to do it cheaply, but it looks pretty terrible by today's standards now. When if you got a much bigger budget, I mean, Jesus, that movie made about what that scene probably would cost to shoot properly in a normal action movie these days.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is very true. Yeah. And it was such a great scene, especially when the dispatch calls and says, we have all the off ramps blocked off. Correction. We are no longer on the freeway. We are now on the L. Yeah. so well written. Like, the dialogue is just so snappy, so perfectly timed all the way through it, yeah, from everybody.
Yeah, and that's what really makes that movie work. And you nailed it. Timing is key, yeah, in this movie.
Yeah, it's so, yeah. Kudos to the writers,
yeah, right,
and the director, because, yeah, everything was just so well put together that you can't help but enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, and there's scenes that don't matter. You don't think that matter too much. Like, there's the police lineup, and they're just fucking with Snake.
Yeah,
so they can cut him loose and follow him.
Yeah,
but they had him in the lineup, and there's Billy Crystal putting on another voice. He's the man.
Yeah.
I saw him. Yeah. You know, it's so good. I wish I could do accents.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, that's one thing I did notice when I was watching this is Billy Crystal's voices all kind of sound like Billy Crystal's voices to me now because I've seen him do them so often.
Yeah, like, you know what? Amazon Prime has the old like Dean Martin roasts on, yeah, there. There's a couple with Billy Crystal, and he just kind of he goes on as doing imitations.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that is not the Billy Crystal I know. Like, you're not an imitation act.
Yes.
I mean, you're good at it, but that shouldn't be your act. I thought it was awful when he's, you know, trying to imitate other personalities at the time, Howard Cosell, and like, oh, this is just,
well,
it was trite then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard to think, like, because yeah, I think that he has fun doing the voices, and I think that's why,
yeah,
they.
But that was, yeah, he would have been on soap then. He was, yeah, just like a kid,
yeah,
coming, yeah, up.
Well, didn't he do a season of SNL as well?
I don't recall.
I'm going to look it up while we talk. You keep talking while I look it up.
Oh yeah, because that's so much easier when there's only two of us.
That, I know exactly, isn't it?
Right? Well, while Sam's looking that up, you know what? You guys can interact with us over at Invasion Remake on Twitter and all our other social media as well. We're Invasion the Remake over on Facebook and Instagram. So join the conversation and find us there. And of course, you can email us invasiontheremake@gmail.com to be part of the show.
I was correct. He did do at least one season of SNL.
All right.
Yeah. I think that's where he came out of there into this. It was his next sort of,
right,
foray back into scripted.
Well, you know, everybody, that seems to be a great launch pad for careers.
It's for most people, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there are a few where they've kind of not come out smelling like roses.
Yeah. Well, some come out.
Pat, we're looking at you.
Yeah. Well, some come out swinging, and then they just wind up doing the same thing for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Happy Madison. Everything out of Happy Madison. Every time I see another one on Netflix, nope.
No, I don't get me on my Adam Sandler rant or my comedians who play the same character rant.
Yeah.
You heard it last week.
That's true. We don't need to repeat that.
No. But yeah, this is definitely not a Happy Madison joint.
No. And that is not ever going to be part of my casting.
No.
Unless it seems so obvious to me, like, all right, it's Adam Sandler. This just feels like an Adam Sandler movie.
Well, and there's a lot of Adam Sandler regulars that are really competent.
For sure.
Right.
For sure.
And they just get... Problem with Happy Madison is all of the actors that are regulars always play the same characters because that's just how he does things.
Mm-hmm. And that's good for a while, but yeah, you get a little bored of that after a while. I like it when he does some stretches every once in a while.
Yeah, and that was essentially the point of my rant last week is yeah, I know that Adam Sandler is capable of so much more than the man-child. Mm-hmm. I've seen him do it. Right? And when he did Punch-Drunk Love, I'm like, oh, wow, he's growing. He's expanding as an actor. Mm-hmm. Then he did Spanglish. I'm like, well done.
Mm-hmm.
Then he just rolled right back into...
Well, I mean, I think part of that is audience resistance as well. Yeah. If they're expecting something and get something else. And it's tough. I mean,
it is tough because very few comedic actors make it out of the comedic roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Robin Williams is a great example of the success for that.
And
Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's had successful, but then he'll roll back again.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with doing both,
mm-hmm,
right? That's the beauty of film, right? Is you can do more than one genre. You don't have to just be a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, when you look at
I think anything from Ron Williams, his best work was his dramatic work, I think.
I would have to agree with you. Yeah, he was excellent in his dramatic roles, like it's superior in his dramatic roles.
Yeah.
I still love Hook.
I mean, certainly there are some, you know, Hook is fantastic, Good Morning Vietnam, where there's a lot of seriousness to it, but he can still do the comedy in there as well, and Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, where that you find that balance where you can still have Robin be Robin, but also, you know, put some gravitas to it.
Exactly. And I mean, I want to talk about Billy, because he's done some roles that were not really comedic roles. I mean, they call Harry When Harry Met Sally a romantic comedy, but it's really not that funny of a movie. It has its moments, but it's a pretty serious look at a long-term relationship that's takes a long time to come together. And then there's another, the other one where he plays the basketball referee, and I can't remember the name of the movie. My wife loves it too.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw that one.
It's really good. It's actually a very, very good movie. But again, not that funny. Like he's very good at that dramedy type of acting, right, where there's humor, but it's the subject matter is quite serious. So he was, I would have loved to see more of that from him. Those are the kind of actors that I really like to see, where they can still stick with their core skill set, which is, in these, for these guys, humor, but still stretch beyond the character that they're most known for. Right, and that's unfortunately what some actors get stuck in, which is terrible. I think that Hollywood needs to force these guys to do more. And when, if it's not successful the first time, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Well, I would have said this a few years ago. It was a great time where you could really push the boundaries and try things new. I mean, we did see Adam Sandler and Jim Carrey do that with Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind, and as you said, Punch Drunk Love. But as we're seeing this new world that is controlled by Walt Disney, I don't know if there's as much room for that anymore, because, I mean, I'm a little worried that the Fox Searchlight type of movies are going to go away under the Disney umbrella, but hopefully not.
Yeah, that... So this is already, by the time you guys hear this, will be a week old news, but this kind of brings up something that's kind of, I mean, I'm not going to get ranty about it, but I could quite easily, about James Gunn firing from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's, we're, yeah, San Diego is happening as we're talking about this, San Diego Comic-Con, and there's definitely lots of commentary about that. And I think that was a little knee-jerk of a response, a little extreme response for maybe some incendiary comments, but that he made like 10 years ago on his Twitter. That's the thing. You say something shitty, it stays out there forever. But the extreme response for that. And he's taking on the chin. He's like, if that's the lumps I have to take for saying something stupid, then I will take it.
He's being very, very professional about
it. Yeah, he's taking full responsibility for it. But this is a case where I'm like, okay, yeah, they were a little insensitive. And yeah, I think you were trying to be incendiary and try to create a conversation. It just didn't come off very well.
And
I'm sure that was the exact intent of the post.
There were a lot of them. I did read quite a few of them. And they're pretty fucking awful, actually. And
there were a couple I actually remember reading, because I followed them on Twitter for quite some time.
Out of context, that they are just terrible.
Yeah.
Right? They were mocking something that was happening in the United States at the time. Right.
This feels like it's a
smear campaign.
This just feels like an intentionally trying to derail somebody's career.
And that's exactly what it was.
And I guess, hey, congratulations, you did it. Yeah. Fuckers. I don't think he should have been yanked off a successful franchise like Guardians. And I don't think Guardians is going to be better for it.
No, not at all.
You shouldn't be fired over shitty tweets. Maybe you should be fired. Yeah, there's definitely things you should be fired for. I'm not sure a 10-year-old tweet is one of them.
I think the problem is it's a 10-year-old tweet about pedophilia.
Right.
It's Disney, right?
Yeah, okay, right. Fair.
And it's pedophilia.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah, it is pretty awful. And again, the context is everything, like everything. And out of context...
Yeah, see, from me, my perspective, this is the guy who comes from the trauma camp, where they say... and do horrible things on screen to make a point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, he even reminded people that. It's like, you know, I was just coming out of being with Roma and saying off-color things and stuff that deliberately intended to shock.
Yeah, he's from the Matt and Trey Parker camp. He's from the South Park camp.
Yeah.
So when people shit on him, they forget, like, oh, yeah, he's one of those guys. We shouldn't be looking at this in a serious tone. We should be looking at
the whole story, not just what this one organization is put out there to try and get him shit canned, yeah. which they did.
Yeah, no, I think it's a terrible situation, but you know, hopefully that'll blow over because I think more people are on his side than against. And yeah, okay, he lost his Disney gig, but he's shown us what he can do now.
Yeah,
and he's shown he can make $1 billion movie. So he's going to bounce back. He'll go and do whatever he wants to do now, and he'll be able to get the money for it. You know, it's not going to be a low-budget horror movie like Slither, which is awesome, by the way. He can do whatever the hell he wants, and it's going to be great, and people are going to go see it because he's got a nice big fan base now, and his movies will make money. So I'm hoping that's going to be the case. You know, he might have to release it under a different banner. It won't be Fox Disney, but nope. You know, I'm sure Universal will come and say, hey, come on board.
Possibly. Right. Weinstein will put him out for sure.
Oh, well, Weinsteins don't exist anymore. That's another,
I'm just making a joke.
That's another company that's up for sale.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to touch it.
No.
For obvious reasons.
Not under that banner. Hell no.
No. Yeah. I mean, they're going to probably have to liquidate certain properties because nobody wants to buy the company, but I think they want the properties.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's so much great stuff under that banner. And,
for sure. I mean, they've produced some great stuff, but... Oh, it's toxic. That name is toxic.
It really is. And it's always sad when something gets contaminated like that. Mm-hmm. Because, and I've said this before on the cast here, is it's really difficult to separate the person from the art.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the art, it has to be separate in some way. Because otherwise you're depriving yourself of some really wonderful things,
mm-hmm.
despite what an individual might have done.
Yeah, right? I mean, especially in light of certain actors and some of their...
Indiscretions.
I mean, I'm trying to be polite about it, but being dickheads.
Yes. No, and actually, I mean...
and doing just illegal and horrible...
Disgusting things.
But, you know, the work is still there, and some of it's really stellar. So, do I deprive myself of that because he was an asshole? Well, why am I punishing myself for something he did? Why shouldn't I watch that movie because he, you know...
He happens to be in it.
That's... I think backwards.
It's self-defeating.
It is self-defeating. But I don't want to, you know, that stuff's out there. Maybe he shouldn't be getting more work and shouldn't be he or she, but usually he.
Yeah.
They should be punished and maybe they should, maybe.
If it's proven to be
true, absolutely.
Firing somebody over allegations is not cool.
No. But if there's proof to those allegations and... Yeah, they shouldn't be rewarded for it, but everything they did up to that point is still out there. You can't make it go away, as a tweet proves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, do I want to watch American Beauty again? Yes, I do. It's a fantastic film.
Or Unusual Suspects.
Yes. That's
another good example. I mean, we both went to this Kevin Spacey stuff, but...
Yeah, we did.
partly because it's been proven. We know that what he did was certainly inexcusable.
Yeah. But, I mean, I loved The Cosby Show when I was a kid. Did I know he was a fucking rapist? No, I didn't. But I still liked the show.
Yeah.
I still have good memories about the show. Am I going to go back and watch it again?
Well, no, maybe because it's not.
Probably not.
It's probably not as enjoyable now as when you were kids.
You know, but, and I loved his comedy, yeah. But it's like if he did something now, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole because he shouldn't be rewarded for it.
No.
But fuck. Like in, yeah. Guys, stop, actors, actresses, and other people, stop doing shitty things so we can enjoy your work.
Yes. I mean, ultimately, that's exactly it. But the other flip side of the coin is if you're going
to... make sure you have proof. Don't be destroying somebody's career because of a shitty tweet.
Because of a shitty tweet or because you want notoriety
mm-hmm.
for a perceived slight. Right.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Maybe you just don't like this guy's movies.
Yeah.
And you say something and you've destroyed somebody's career.
Yeah. I'm glad.
And I'm not saying that happens, but I'm saying that you be careful.
Yeah. I'm glad that most of the cast of Roseanne are going to come together in something new because a whole lot of people, and it's not just the cast, but the crew of that show lost work and livelihood and supporting their families because she said something shitty on Twitter. Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah, maybe she should definitely not be rewarded for it, but look at all the people that are suffering for it because of it.
Exactly.
It's bullshit.
Right. And you know what? Celebrities, just stay the fuck off Twitter.
Yeah, no shit.
Unless you're retweeting us.
Yeah, retweet us. Don't say anything shitty in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Some behaviors, you know what? They're young. They're being young men, right? Mm-hmm. Or young women. And they do things that maybe as they grow older, realize how shitty they were.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right? So it's intent, right? And that's the thing for me is if there, Weinstein is a great example of somebody who knew better and continued to do it.
Yes.
Right? Kevin Spacey, did he do it when he was younger? Is he still doing it is the question. What did he continue to exhibit that kind of behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Was it a moment of poor judgment or was it an established pattern? Those things matter.
Mm-hmm.
They do matter. I mean, it doesn't excuse the act, but does it mean that the person is still that person?
Yeah, people change and learn from those mistakes.
They certainly do. I mean, I can be completely honest and say that, you know what? I've said things that as an adult now.
Oh, sure. I think about stuff I've said in high school or even in my 20s, yeah, and things I've done. And they're like, boy, that was pretty awful.
Yeah, it was really, really inexcusable.
Yeah.
To me now, I would probably call somebody out for saying something like that.
Yeah.
Right? But I didn't have anybody to call up my younger self to correct me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and you think about just the stuff you used to see on television in the 90s and the early 2000s, like society's changed and things you could get away with then you can't get away with now.
No. So, and nor should you.
Yeah, nor should you. And, you know, it's fine to go back to more traditional society. And I'm okay with that, but it doesn't seem the morals seem to be coming along with it.
We need to go back to a time of more respect.
Yeah.
But let's not over-police it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
No, right. I mean, it'll change. It'll change. And, yeah.
There has to be a balance.
Yeah. The society norms change, and hopefully this oversensitivity will even out at some point as we start seeing more and more people unjustly persecuted. Because I knew when it started, it was going to turn into a witch hunt at some point. And it's a shame that some people who are pretty good human beings as whole are being dragged through the mud for, you know, one or two shitty things they said.
Or not even shitty
and
things.
And it's not even, yeah, I mean.
I mean, Matt Dickman's a great example. He said something, and he chose his words poorly.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't say anything shitty. He just phrased it incorrectly.
Yeah.
And
who hasn't done that?
Yeah, that's the whole glass houses thing.
Yeah.
Right? It really is. So,
but, you know, the guys in the public eye, they're the ones that are going to get the biggest rocks.
And you know what? Celebrities really, when stuff like this needs to happen, they just need to learn to get their heads down and not comment on it because it's going to get you in trouble.
No shit. Right? Well, at least when James Gunn commented on it, he did it in a very classy way. He wasn't trying to avoid the responsibility. He's like, well, if that's what they want to do, like that's the responsibility I have to take.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was 10 years ago and I'm not that person, like, and I chose poorly, yeah, people say things wrong sometimes and they're trying to incite a discussion, and that was one of those times where words were chosen poorly. When I read them, like, yep, he's a trauma guy, that was I could tell, like, the era that was from.
For sure. Right? I mean again, out of context, they're horrible.
They
are awful. Right? Like, they truly are.
The first thing I really like, familiarize yourselves with the trauma guys. Matt and Trey Parker, just go watch a few episodes of South Park and you go,
Right, and I mean, we've gotten way off topic, and we're sorry, folks, if you didn't want to hear.
Yeah,
that stuff,
this was supposed to be a closeout, and then it turned into a different conversation. But
yes, but you know what? Sometimes you get bonus material.
This is your bonus material right now.
We do have opinions on stuff.
Soapbox.
Yes, we try to keep our opinions out of this, but sometimes we just have an opportunity to rant.
Yeah, it's been a while since I said somebody, you know, accused us of being too progressive or conservative
or political
or whatever. Stop being too nice. Like, fuck, we're not nice. We're Canadian.
Yeah. Yes.
We can't help it.
Yes, we find the good in everything, but we're not afraid to point out the bad.
That's right. And Trish isn't here because this would have gotten really bad.
Yes, it would have been. It would have gotten very, very bad.
Oh, no. Oh, no. They don't pay me anymore.
We never got paid.
Never. Never. It was still paying to make this podcast.
And that's okay.
So, you know, knowing this is all coming out of my pocket, in our pockets. How about you throw us a little bit of a bone? I'm not asking you for money, but I'm asking for your support. Tell your friends about the show and tell them where to find us. Leave us a 5-star rating and a short review over on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, and tell everybody where to find us. Of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio. A couple episodes on Spreaker.
Yeah. Podbean.
Podbean. We're everywhere. We are literally everywhere. So just get everybody's phones or whatever and get your friend's phone and say, hey, this is your podcast app. Search out Invasion of the Remake. There we are. We're even on...
freaking YouTube. It's not the same.
No, it's not. Well, I'll do it with you.
Okay.
We're even on...
freaking YouTube.
Nope.
No, it's just not the same.
I was going to lead into the earballs thing, but
it's not the same. As I could have done it, but it wouldn't be the same.
Oh, no earballs.
you know what? We'll insert the end of another episode after this.
I won't, but that's a good idea. So, yeah, tell everybody about the show. And, of course, if you see us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, share it out with your friends and just tell everybody. Get the invasion happening.
Yeah, please do. We're working really, really interacting with people on Twitter, Facebook. When people do interact with us, we always respond.
Yeah, our page is at Invasion Remake, and Sam's doing most of the heavy lifting over there. But you can follow us individually as well. Yeah. Our Twitter handles are there. I'm at jbishop616.
I'm steps at step Sam S, but you know what? Just follow Invasion of the Remake because I'm there so much more.
Yeah, exactly. And Trish is never on hers, but she's at Little Trishy. Yeah. I think it might have been a year since she's last posted.
January was the last time she posted.
Okay, not that bad, but still, that's pretty bad.
Yeah,
6 months.
Yeah, it's been about 6 months. And then on Instagram, we're trying to get a little more active on Instagram. I'm trying some new tools that will let me be more effective, efficient with Instagram and Twitter. So it's coming. It's coming, I promise.
Yeah. And you know what's coming next week? It's 150th episode.
Already.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to pick up something. I don't know. We'll try to pick a bigger movie for you. And we're closing in on our 3rd anniversary as well.
So. Yes, we are.
Wow. Crazy.
It's insane.
We went from the... untested amateurs to the wily veteran slash amateurs.
Yes, the experienced amateurs.
Yes, yes, the longest running podcast to never make money. The best podcast you're not listening to.
No,
but
people
change that. Let's change that.
Yeah, people are listening. You guys are listening. Obviously, otherwise you wouldn't have heard that.
Yes, and we've got kind of an unofficial podcast community network thing happening with a bunch of other podcasts. So please go support our friends when you hear another podcast like you did at the beginning of this episode. Make sure you go check them out and give us a shout out. Hey, we heard about you on Invasion of the Remake, and that's why I'm listening to you now.
Yeah, and we've had a few people do that, and we thank you for that. And I did want to mention that there's something really exciting that might be coming up in October. We're still in the planning stages, but with this podcast community, there's something that's...
What? More than 31 Days of Horror?
This...
More than every episode of Invasion of the Remake being horror-based?
There are going to be a whole bunch of fun things happening.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
actually, it's not that far away anymore.
Not that far away anymore, nope. But... Man, yeah, you guys like the horror episodes. Oh, man, you might be in your glory.
Yeah, we're working on something that could be potentially really big.
Is that a word? Horror glory?
Horror glory? Let's hashtag that.
Hashtag that.
It's
like morning wood.
Yes.
It's the horror glory.
Yeah, we're going to throw that out there.
It's
we're going to be using
it's like morning glory, but horror glory.
Yeah. Yeah, we're.
I don't know what that means. It's just this mangled penis.
Well, we talked about that last week in Piranha. We talked about the mangled penis.
That's right.
So yeah, it works.
It's a thing.
But yeah, I think that's we'll hashtag that. If it doesn't catch on, it doesn't catch on.
That's right. We got a few that've caught on now, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. But yeah, we're excited about it. We're going to see if we can make it happen.
That's right. All right, well, watch out for the hashtag all the horror. That might help you out a bit.
Yeah, keep an eye out.
We started using that Two years ago. We've been doing that one, All the Horror, for quite some time. Look for the horror to spread.
Yes. And we'll tell you, once we know what's going on, we'll fill you in.
All right. Well, next week, 150. Hopefully Trish will be here.
Knock on wood.
No kidding. I hate to do those like big anniversaries without the crew, man.
No, it's not the same if not all three of us are here. Right?
That's right. All right. Well, that's it. I've been Jason, and I'm not running scared.
I'm always Sam.
I'm sitting editing.
Yeah. And as soon as this is over, I'm running home to make dinner, so.
Okay. And, oh no, Trish is still Trish. Oh, they don't pay me no more. We are out of here.
Detective Sigliano and Detective Montoya, please. My name is Pinky. Is this a detective? I usually inform for Hughes and Costanza, but they don't pay me no more. Oh, no! So I'm just watching the new Jeopardy, and a man missed a Bible question because he did not know what Deuteronomy was. Oh, yeah, I'll help you. I want you to get Gonzalez and show up using Costanzo. They don't pay me no more, and I'm mad. Oh, no. You dummy, the answer is Ipswich clams. The man who can take to Gonzalez, his name is Adam Robertson. He's a highfalutin lawyer type who lives at 1358 Lakeshore Drive. Oh, mother, can I have some more petite marshmallows in my hot cocoa? Gotta go, final deputy's on.